Hello everybody. This is the translation of Lucy Bardio's message for Sunday the 28th of July. Last Sunday, we observed that 40% of French people never go on vacation, and that of the other 60%, two-thirds go on vacation several times a year. What makes the difference? A question of personal dispositions. There are homebodies and travellers. It is certainly also a question of finances, having a vacation budget, or paying the gas and the rent. Difficult choices, vacation or a new boiler. There are the rich, the less rich, the poor and the very poor. In the Bible, it's the same. We meet rich and poor people, and we often find both in the same chapter. The Word of God shows us, in all the books of the Bible, that God is as interested in the rich as in the poor, in the sick as in the healthy, in the traveller as is in the sedentary, etc. This Sunday, like last Sunday, I want to look with you at one of these chapters that shows these differences, but also shows how much God is interested in each person, regardless of their condition. We read in 2 Kings chapter 4 the story of the rich woman who will enlarge her house, build an upper room for the prophet Elisha so that he can rest, recharge his batteries when he is passing through. There were two women in this chapter, one rich, the other poor. Last week, I first paid attention to the rich lady. That's what attracts the most attention, right? Today, we will look at the condition of this poor woman. Let's read 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 to 7. The wife of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that he revered the Lord. But now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slaves." Elisha replied to her, "How can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" "Your servant has nothing there at all," she said, "except a small jar of olive oil." Elisha said, "Go around and ask all your neighbours for empty jars. Don't ask for just a few. Then go inside and shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour oil into all the jars, and as each is filled, put it to one side." She left him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars to her and she kept pouring. When all the jars were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another one." But he replied, "There is not a jar left." Then the oil stopped flowing. She went and told the man of God, and he said, "Go sell the oil and pay your debts. You and your sons can live on what is left." Have you noticed the title of the book we just read? It's the Book of Kings. It should be about prominent people, important for what is happening on a national level. But here in this chapter, the national context, these important kings do not appear at all. This passage is about a woman. She is a poor widow. She even has debts. She's going to ask the prophet to help her. Who is she? A woman whose husband was a prophet. We read in verse 1, a servant of Elisha. How can we understand this? Elisha, a great prophet, had apparently surrounded himself with other prophets. He himself had been chosen by Elijah after the latter had experienced a serious depression, a burnout, a professional exhaustion, as we would say today. You can read about it in chapter 19 of the first book of Kings. God grants Elijah, following this crisis, among other things, the grace to find a travelling companion, a fighting companion. They will continue the path of the prophet together. It is better. First principle to remember, the man of God is not a soloist. He knows how to surround himself. Then Elisha was not pursued by Jezebel, the wicked wife of King Ahab, as Elijah had been. Elisha therefore had the possibility of surrounding himself with a brotherhood of prophets. He does not fear competition. He passes the baton. He teaches the new generation of servants who will follow in his footsteps. Because like last week, I am talking to you at the start of this chapter about the servants of God. Like Elisha, the prophet in this chapter, but also like this poor woman who comes to seek help from Elisha. It is not simply marked that she is a woman, a poor woman, a mother of two children. She is identified as the wife of one of the prophets. She shared her husband's ministry. She was associated with him. Not that she was a prophetess herself, but she experienced with him the joys and sorrows of the ministry. We serve God together, not as solitary beings. It is true between husband and wife in Christian couples. It is true in the church. We are not soloists. We depend on each other. We cannot serve alone. But here is the misfortune. In this fourth chapter of the second book of Kings, a prophet has died. Who is affected first? His wife. There is no social security, no widow's pension, and she has debts. Maybe she looked for a job but didn't find one. Not easy for a woman at the time in this culture. So debts mount up quickly. We borrow here and there from former colleagues, friends, to help us get through a difficult time, except that, well, at some point, they too need their money and come to demand repayment. Like the bank for your mortgage. If you don't pay any more, they sell your house. Here is another time, another country, another context. When you don't know how to pay your debts, they take your children. They sell them as slaves. What mother would accept that? So this woman cried out to Elisha. Yes, yes, she didn't just address him, she cried out. The Hebrew verb makes it clear that she was complaining. She doesn't come to Elisha to ask nicely, would you like to do something for me? No, she bothers him, she comes to complain. The poor complain, the poor demonstrate, the indignant are in the streets, the poor beg at the traffic lights in big cities. To beg is to complain in a particular way. This poor woman, she complains to Elisha. So I ask you a question. Can a Christian complain? Shouldn't we always be grateful, always joyful? Some think so. Isn't it true that Paul writes, rejoice in the Lord, rejoice always? The prefix of rejoice, re, should put you on the right track. One can be downcast, sad, complain. This is a step before pulling oneself together, re-enjoying oneself. So let's not rush things. There is room for complaint in the life of the believer. Look at the Psalms of David. They are often complaints, long complaints, addressed to God, not to a prophet like Elisha, but downright complaints addressed to God, complaining about God. But David's complaints, his revolt concerning his situation, turn into songs of praise. After a certain time, of course, it was first necessary to express a strong complaint. A complaint, a normal step. This woman, widowed, poor, complains to Elisha. Why? My situation is not fair. You have to do something. After all, you were chief prophet, the master coach of my husband, who was one of your fellow prophets. You owe me something. Rather than saying this, that this woman approaches Elisha full of faith, I think it's the opposite. Isn't she in a situation where you would think that God has abandoned her? That she is alone, that she must get by as best she can? She asks someone for help. We don't see her praying. She makes demands on men, a man of God, nonetheless, but a man. Her attitude is not, at first glance, that of faith, but that of revolt, of complaint. In the Word of God we find plenty of people who complain. It's not forbidden. To complain is to express oneself, which is not a sin. It is a first step, perhaps a first step of faith. If to complain is to say, that what we have is not yet what God has promised us. It is to remember the promises of God. Complaining to God is an expression of faith. I know you are there and that you are listening to me. God, in your word, I read that, and yet my situation is different. He who does not have faith in God, in his omnipotence, does not complain to him or to his servants. He does not expect anything from God, does not even address himself to God. He who complains to God hopes for something better. Sometimes complaining is showing hope, in a way. Now do not make me say what I did not say. Not every complaint is an expression of hope in God, of faith in God. Not every complaint is justified. But sometimes not complaining would mean not having faith, believing that God is not interested in us, does not want to do anything for us, does not listen to our prayers. We have the right to express our emotions to God. It is also a sign of our confidence that the one who is the creator of emotions will be able to manage my emotions. Let us now return to our story. Elisha's response to the poor widow's complaint, the prophet's first response, surprises me. After saying in verse 2, "What can I do for you?" he said to her, "Tell me what you have at home." She has just told him, "I have nothing left. I can no longer pay my debts." And Elisha is not satisfied with what she said, "I have nothing." He said to her, "What do you have at home?" She only thinks about money to pay her debts, money that she doesn't have. Elisha's answer is, "What do you have at home?" Sometimes we think we have nothing, that we don't have what we need. So try asking God to tell you, to show you what you have. More than 20 years ago, as a young farmer, I had to prove that I had achieved a certain result with the farm in order to receive the last payment of a bonus that would help me finish paying off my debt, the bank loans, for the purchase of land, the tractor, the machines, the livestock. The accounting showed that I was missing a certain amount. I didn't have the result that was the target. I was just missing a few thousand euros, but I wouldn't be able to receive the bonus. What should I do in this situation, when you don't have what you need? I'm in my sheepfold and I pray to God, "Show me how I get out of this situation." Now the older ones and the farmers among you will understand me. There was a pile of manure in front of the sheepfold, at least 2 years old. I pray to God and then God speaks to me, "What do you see?" Not a voice audible like thunder, a voice that no one else hears, but I understand that God is speaking to me. "What do you see?" I answer, "A pile of manure, Lord. What else do you want me to see?" Then in an instant I understand. I begin to estimate the number of cubic meters of this stock of manure. I calculate the market value of this pile of manure. I gave this figure to the accountant and he recalculated and it worked. I could get the grant. God, by showing me manure, helped me to get through a difficult period at the time in my farm. However, to the question, "What do you see?" I answered, "I have nothing. I only have a pile of manure." So Elisha's question to the widow does not surprise me, "What do you have at home?" Because with what you have, God can do something. Complaining is saying, "I only have." Faith is putting into practice what we have, despite everything. This passage reminds me of a story in the Gospels, the disciples who complained to Jesus, "We only have." Matthew chapter 14, verses 14 to 20. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. The prophet Elisha goes to tell the poor widow, who is only a little oil, to go and get containers from her neighbours. She does so, apparently without any asking any questions, full of faith. Is it an act of faith or an act of desperation? It is better to do this. I have no other choice anyway. And the oil begins to flow in sufficient quantity for the widow to sell the oil and be able to repay her creditors. It is a story of a miracle. As for the disciples, the multiplication of the loaves, it was a situation of lack for the widow as well as for the disciples. The disciples complained, like the widow. They are overwhelmed. They cannot meet the demands of the crowd. The widow, she could not meet the demands of her creditors. We do not have what is needed, they say, the disciples and the widow in both cases. Jesus says to his disciples, this crowd, you, give them something to eat. No, they answer, it's not possible. We only have 5 loaves and 2 fish. But they bring them, and that will be more than enough to feed the crowd. Like our poor widow, she only has a jar of oil. However, that will be enough to pay her debt. Often we are complainers like this woman. We only see what we lack. And now I no longer want to talk about what we lack materially, financially. We also see, let's be honest, our spiritual shortcomings. We feel like we are in debt to God. He has given us so much. What can we give in return? And we say to ourselves, what I have, my limited means, talents, my little time, my money, is not enough. I cannot pay my debt. Exactly. Except that you are not asked to pay a debt. Nothing in the world would be enough to pay your debts to God. Besides, you no longer have a debt. Otherwise, what would grace mean? If everything is a question of exchange, value for value, we might as well commit suicide because we would never be able to repay our debt to God. And yet, how many people try? I hear people say, I do this or that for the Lord. I have learned to be wary of this expression, because sometimes I am tempted to ask, are you doing this to repay your debt? It is so much more pleasant to do for the Lord out of love. We cannot pay God. We are like the poor widow, faced with a creditor whom we will never be able to repay. Except that God is not the kind of creditor who will confiscate our children to pay our debt. The miracle is completely different, quite the opposite. God, the one who was my creditor, it is he who gave his son to redeem me. Never say that what you are doing is to repay your debt to God. That is nonsense, impossible to repay. And what is more, it is saying, no, I do not want your grace. God does not ask us to repay. He asks us to pay out of what we have. He does not ask us for repayment, but to pay out of love. Love in return for all that he has given us, gives every day, will give in eternity. The disciples in the gospel were asked to give what? Their insufficiency, 5 loaves and 2 fish. The poor widow in 2 Kings 4, she is asked to pour out what she has, a vase of oil, next to nothing, insignificant, insufficient. I go even further, the parable of the talents in Matthew chapter 25. He who had received 5 talents gained 5 more. He who had received 2 talents gained 2 more. He who had received only 1 talent, he did nothing with them. That is what he is criticized for. The little we have is what we must put into play. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that if you only have 5 euros for the week to put them in the offering box, it's not a question of money, it's a question of talents. Certainly at the time when the Gospels were written, the 2 words were translated as one. A talent was a value of money. The oil from the poor widow, that too had a value in money. That is not what it is about, not giving one's money, but giving what money symbolizes, giving one's knowledge, giving one's time, giving to receive, not giving to repay a debt, giving to receive, as unlikely as it may seem, the widow gives the little oil she has, and she receives all the more in return. She does not try with her little oil to repay her creditor, to make pretty eyes at him so that he says that it is enough. She knows it will never be enough. But she takes the little that is left to her, the little that she has, and following the instructions of the prophet Elisha, and with the blessing of God it multiplies. Now it is your turn. You owe so much to God, and yet he is not your creditor. He is the one who invites you to pour out what you have so that he can multiply it. Do you have time? Give it, he will multiply it. Do you have talent? Give it, he will multiply it. If this widow had stuck to her point of view, I only have a little oil, if she had not put it into play, she would have remained poor. If the disciples had not brought the 5 loaves and 2 fish, the crowd might have gone away hungry, without listening to Jesus any longer. What matters is to give the little that we have, to put it into action. God multiplies. Never say, I only have. I am only. You are sometimes the only person, the only means that God has in a situation, in a given context. I often hear Christians complain, I don't have, I only have, as an excuse for, I don't do, because. I see in the Bible that we are always in a situation of lack, even the self-sufficient, the rich, always in a situation of lack towards God, towards his demands. Sin always lies at our door. Each time I let myself be caught up in other occupations, I don't pray enough, I don't read the Bible. God is not an accountant. He doesn't count what we lack. He counts what we have and sees if we put it into play. Complaining is not necessarily sinning. Noticing that we have only is an invitation to highlight. Only 2 talents, only 5 loaves, only 1 flask of oil. Today I invite you to notice, to take inventory of what you have. The widow in 2 Kings chapter 4 quickly took inventory. I only have 1 jar of oil. But with that, what can God do? The disciples had only 2 loaves and 5 fish. All these things considered are the fact that there was more than enough, there was too much. They took away 12 baskets of leftover pieces. As for the widow in 2 Kings chapter 4, she could have continued to pour oil if she had had more containers. The oil flowed in excess. Yet she complained at the beginning. From complaint to abundance, that could have been the title of the sermon. My brothers, my sisters, the oil of grace flows. You have seen your shortcomings. I only have. You do not have before you a creditor God, but a God who has given what he had most dear for you. Give, put into play what you have, your talents, your gifts, your time, and for those who have enough, your money. Get involved. The invitation is to act. Amen. For the widow, God was able to act with just a little oil at the beginning. Jesus' disciples, thanks to his power, did it with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Those who have received talents and make them bear fruit will be rewarded. He who says, I only have, and stops there, will know only a few blessings. He who puts into play the little he has, God will do it far beyond what we imagine. Let God imagine things. Let us simply put at his disposal what we have. I only have a vase of oil, only 5 loaves. A little time, a little skill, know-how, experience, that will be enough for him who does infinitely beyond what we think and ask. Let us go, like the widow, from poverty to abundance, from complaint to blessing. And I end by telling you what an American doctor, a hospital cardiologist and university professor, therefore hyperactive, full of talents, wrote after receiving his cancer diagnosis, only a few months to live. He writes, I was head of department and I became dependent to do the least thing. I was the chief decision maker and now others decide for me. From a hyperactive, I became a good for nothing. This is his complaint. However, his reflection continues. He writes again, however, I am a Christian and Jesus tells me to love my neighbour as myself. I no longer know how to get out of this hospital. Who is my neighbour? What can I do? Nothing, it seems to me. Yet my neighbour is the nurse who comes to take my blood for the umpteenth time, to whom I can offer a kind word, instead of my annoyance, my bitterness. My neighbour is that other patient in the hallway who rarely has visitors. My neighbour is the mother with her stroller, waiting for the elevator to go down to the cafeteria. A smile, that's all I have to give. It's much more than nothing at all. The same cardiologist, very sick, has all the time in the world to read and tells of having read the story of a Christian imprisoned in solitary confinement for years. He came out of prison in good mental health. How is that possible? The prisoner, when he was feeling down, and I suppose he saw cockroaches too, he would take his mind off things by starting to pray for others, the other inmates, the people he remembered, his jailers. He prayed. He had nothing left to give but that. He gave, and it helped him stay sane. The cardiologist, he smiled, he was kind, he opened the door to someone. He gave what he had. Two times nothing, less than nothing, it was enough. So if after your complaint you cry for help, today Elisha asked you, what's wrong with you? What would you answer? It deserves reflection. Amen.